Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
You are listening to Retronauts, a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. To hear more great shows, or to learn how you could become part of our consortium of independently owned podcasts, check out greenlitpodcasts.com. This week in Retronauts, let them eat cake. Everyone, welcome to Retronauts. I believe, if my numbers are correct and nothing changes, which is always possible, this is episode 393, and it's taken us this long to finally have a podcast about a girl. No, that's not entirely true, but you know, we've been journeying through the Mario series, looking very granularly at the games and at the characters, and we would be remiss not to give one of the most prominent and iconic women characters in video games her own episode. So we are talking about Princess Peach this episode, or if you are an old timer, Princess Toadstool, but we're going to call her Peach because that's a weird name. So, you know, she's kind of the main female protagonist of the Mario series, I would say. And, you know, this kind of continues our, and actually, I guess, kind of wraps up our look at Nintendo, you know, Mario characters. We've got Mario, Wario, Toad, Yoshi, now Princess Peach. That's it. That's everyone. So I'm glad we're finally wrapping up these kind of character-specific discussions of the important characters of the Mario series. Anyway, I'm Jeremy Parrish, and I have got it. Who else is here talking with us? Actually, let's start with the ladies. There's a lady from Canada on the show talking about the lady character from the Mushroom Kingdom.
Hello, I am Nadia Oxford, the lady from Canada, and not necessarily the lady from the Mushroom Kingdom, as far as you know, and I'm glad to be here.
And also over on the west coast of America.
Hello, it's Kat Bailey, and my podcast is in another castle. Just kidding. Ha, 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 ha.
All right. You are a married japester. Anyway, finally, who else is here bringing up the caboose of this podcast, but not necessarily anyway, yes. Who is it?
It's Bob Mackey, and formerly there was a stack of toads here, but I had to usher them away.
Okay. Excellent. So, anyway, yes, Princess Peach has not been a part of the Mario franchise for as long as Mario, but she was, you know, kind of the second character introduced in the series. You know, you had Mario in 1981 with Donkey Kong, but the person he was rescuing there was not Princess Peach. It was a lady whose name was either Lady or Pauline, depending on which canon source and which fan wiki you choose to believe. Mario then kind of goofed around in, you know, a bunch of different roles throughout the next half decade, especially in Game & Watch, but also in arcades, on Famicom and NES. He was a villain in Donkey Kong Jr. He was a soldier in Mario's Bombs Away for Game & Watch. He was a carpenter in Wrecking Crew. He was a line judge in tennis. He played golf in the game Golf. So he was kind of all over the place, but he finally returned to his Lady Savin roots with Super Mario Brothers 1985. A big, epic, extraordinarily popular, extraordinarily influential game in which he traveled through a bunch of different castles until he finally found the one where the captive princess was contained. And then he saved her. And she said, "Thank you for saving me. Your reward is to do it all again, but harder." And because that game was so popular, so influential, everyone who was in that game, all the characters, Bowser, the Toads, and Princess Peach, they all became part of the Mario canon. And, you know, basically everything that happened with the Mario series from that point really built on the kind of the dynamics and the visuals and the characters of Super Mario Brothers. And there, you know, there's some outliers. There were a few times where Nintendo R&D 1 got a hold of Mario instead of Nintendo EAD. They were like, hey, let's make it something more like, you know, Wrecking Crew or Mario Brothers. So you'd have, you know, kind of the little odd regressions to the previous style and form. But mostly you had Mario games building on the legacy of Super Mario Brothers. And so, as such, Princess Peach has become a mainstay of the series and just an iconic element of Mario and almost recognizable in her way as Mario himself and Bowser. And so, as a result, you know, she's very iconic. She's shown up in a lot of games. And now I will put the question to you. What are your thoughts on Princess Peach? Like her role? What was, you know, when did you first encounter the character? That sort of thing, et cetera, et cetera. Bob, we'll start with you since you went last before.
I think I didn't think very much about her until Mario 2 because it was a novel idea to play as a girl in a video game, and it still is over 30 years later. And I was just thinking, I think I might know too much about Princess Peach because I was recently on something for the Found Footage Festival in which we were watching one of the old cartoons, which I'm sure we'll talk about in this podcast. And in the cartoon, they call her Princess Toadstool because that's what she was called then. And the guys on the show were like, Princess Toadstool? I thought she was Princess Peach. And in that moment, I thought, I know too much about the split in time, when she was Peach, when she was Toadstool, the weird game in the middle when she was referred to as Peach, when she was still Toadstool. So yes, I'm just full of Peach lore. But I love whenever she's playable, which is still pretty rare outside of sports games. Wait.
Which one was she referred to as Peach in before they officially changed it over?
I believe in Yoshi's Safari, they accidentally forgot to localize her name into Toadstool. So there is a reference to Princess Peach in Yoshi's Safari. So that is your super deep trivia for this episode.
Wow, that's like the Mega Man game where they accidentally referred to Mega Man as Rock.
And any number of X games where they accidentally referred to Mavericks as irregulars.
Nadia, what about you? What are your thoughts on, just in general, your kind of historic thoughts on Princess Peach?
Well, I didn't really pay much attention to her at first because when you're a girl and there's a girl in a video game or any sort of media, including books or TVs, movie, whatever, their role is usually to get kidnapped. So I thought, okay, Princess Peach, she's the kidnapped like Cypher at the end of the game. That's fine. I thought it was fascinating in the way that a video game was telling a story the way a book would or a television show would, but I didn't really think much of her as a character. Like Bob, I guess it was Super Mario Brothers 2 where the playground, you know, the buzz around the playground was about being able to play as Princess Peach and how she could jump really far. And that actually was kind of important to me because I was not the greatest video game character, a video game player as a kid. So she was not exactly easy mode, but she can make things a lot easier for someone like me who did not have great dexterity and really needed that extra little push to, you know, help with the platform elements of the game. So I really kind of thought it was cool that number one, you could play as Peach in Mario 2, and number two, she was kind of there to help people who needed that extra bit of help. So beyond that, I can't say I gave her much thought, except like I thought it was actually pretty funny in Mario 3 when she pulled that little troll about Princess being in another castle. I thought that was like the joke of the year.
It was funny.
It was kind of funny.
I don't think that was in the Japanese version either. I think they added that in the localization, which was, you know, kind of the first instance of Nintendo of America really saying, or one of the first instances of them saying, hey, let's put some personality into our localizations, which of course we all know is terrible. You can't allow that. It has to be faithful to the original Japanese.
Absolutely.
Bring shame upon your family. Cat.
There are a few key moments over the years that I have thought a lot about Peach. I think the first one was maybe Super Mario 64 when I found out that her name was Peach, not Toadstool, and that bugged me for a long time. I did not realize that originally she was Peach and that it had been localized that way. So look, it just goes to show how localization can really change your opinion on a character. Another time that I remember really thinking about Peach was in Mario RPG, where she takes control of her own destiny for kind of the first time, it felt like, when they were trying to keep her safe after being kidnapped. And she's like, nah, I'm going on an adventure. And she jumps out the window with her little umbrella. And I thought,
a little parasol. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was like, that's cute. One of my favorite moments. It's really cute.
And she throws it away. She just tosses it over her shoulder, which is great.
She's very OP in that game, too. She's a superpowered character.
And then, of course, in Smash Brothers Melee, I did not play as Peach. I was not a Peach main, but I knew people who did play as her, and she was deadly. And she has, to this day, one of the most enjoyable movesets out of anybody in Melee, between being able to deflect attacks with Toad and then pulling up the turnips and throwing them at people. And then, of course, that insanely annoying up attack that can just completely destroy you. And finally, I think that over time, she's grown on me. I did not like her originally. She was kind of an 80s Barbie type character originally, but she's really seized control of her own destiny in many ways in recent years, especially in Super Mario Odyssey. And I've just enjoyed her kind of becoming this wonderful, optimistic, effervescent character who kind of is the smartest one in the room compared to Mario and Bowser.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, in Odyssey, one of my favorite parts of the game was going around the world and seeing her little outfits. Mm-hmm. That was adorable. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. No, the outfits that she's wearing in Odyssey are great.
Yeah, for myself, I don't think anyone really thought too much of the character with Super Mario Brothers, because it was just, you know, like, here's some person you have to rescue, big deal. But Super Mario Brothers 2 obviously was really remarkable. You know, at that point, because Metroid was the first game I bought for my NES, the idea of playing as a girl in a video game was totally normalized for me. I was like, yeah, it's a reward. I get to play as a girl because I did so well beating the game. So, like, she, you know, became much more interesting to play as than Mario, you know, because she had this kind of unusual skill set. And even though she couldn't pull up turnips as quickly, that was really mainly detrimental for gaming the casino, the sub machine at the end of the stages for extra lives. So she was pretty useful and interesting. And it was kind of a disappointment to me when she went back to just being like, hey, I'm abducted in future games. So, yeah, I think it was maybe with Paper Mario, the Thousand Year Door, that I was like, you know, they're actually, when they bother to do anything with Peach, she's actually pretty interesting. And, you know, around that time, you also had things like Super Mario Strikers, where they had this really dynamic art style for the promotional art. Her illustrations there are very energetic and mm-hmm. give her a lot of personality. And that's also about the time Super Princess Peach came out, which had, you know, issues. But I think at that point I was just like, oh, you know, actually she's kind of a cool character. She's not just some bit of background scenery that's just there as an excuse to go out and have an adventure. Sometimes she actually is a character, and it's cool to see, you know, someone who's basically just like wearing a pretty dress and gloves and a tiara go out and kick some ass occasionally. So I've come around on Princess Peach for sure. And she's become a much more interesting character. I would say almost sometimes in spite of her creator's intentions and limitations on her. But, you know, when they do let her shine and be something more than just an objective for Mario, a prize, she's pretty great. So, with that being said, let's look back at the history of Princess Peach, aka Princess Toadstool, which of course begins with Super Mario Brothers. And I'm kind of lumping the Lost Levels and All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers into this because they're all kind of the same thing. But, you know, again, this was a game where Mario set out to save a girl. And that was kind of the motivation. I mean, there was a story in the manual about, like, you know, the evil sorcerer Bowser turned the toads of the kingdom into horsehair plants and bricks, and you smash them up and it's terrible. But really, like, within the game, you were just trying to save the girl. And, you know, in Donkey Kong, the girl was just a girl. She was just like apparently Mario's girlfriend or some friend of his sweetheart, whatever. But here, you know, to say, like, this is a bigger, grander quest. There's a scale to this epic adventure across 32 stages. They had to kind of upgrade the ranking of the person being rescued, and so they made her a princess, because that was also very, you know, kind of 80s cliche, like, go save the princess. So that is kind of her origin, and she only appears at the very end of the game. She's evidently meant to be 15 or 16 years old in this game.
Really? I guess that makes sense.
It depends on your sources, but yeah, if you look around, they've talked about, like, the relative ages of Mario characters, and they've all aged about a decade over the past 30 years, 35 years. Mm. But she started out as, you know, a teenager, and now she's kind of in her early to mid 20s. And, you know, that was also the point where Mario was revealed to be not like a 40-year-old dude, but actually like he was supposed to be 25. And, you know, they've de-aged him visually over time and turned him into a much younger looking man. Whereas Peach pretty much looks the same. Actually, she looks a lot better than she did in her sprite in Super Mario Brothers, which is a pretty horrifying caricature of a human being.
I remember when I first completed Super Mario Brothers, like we had the neighbor kid come over because he could do the 100-man trick. And we got to the end of the game and we saw Peach and we all just kind of yelled in horror just at that sprite. It was so bad.
I love when, a little gouty.
I love when they have to make merch of that sprite design or at least reference it in other works because it's there. They made it. They can't back away from it. They have to present it as it appeared.
If you look at her character art for the first Super Mario Brothers box and stuff like that and like the really early merchandise, she looks like a horrible, like stunted, like Popeye character or something. She does not look like a human being in any regard.
That's true.
She's not that bad in Super Mario Brothers box art.
I thought she looked kind of similar to how she looks now in the instruction manual. Like, I correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like there's a real contrast between the instruction manual art and how she looks in the game.
I mean, there's a real contrast between how any human looks and her sprite in the game.
That is true.
But with Super Mario Brothers, the Lost Level, Super Mario Brothers 2 for Japan, Famicom Disk System, even though it's more or less the same game engine using a lot of the same graphical elements, Mario looks the same. Peach, she looks different. They redrew her sprite at the end and actually looks a lot like Princess Zelda, partially from her the direction she's facing, but also like if you beat The Legend of Zelda while you're wearing, I think, the blue ring, Zelda will have a white dress. Mm-hmm. And Princess Peach in Super Mario 2 for Japan looks a lot like that. But then interestingly, when they reworked that into All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers, they totally redrew Princess Peach. They took that Lost Level sprite and put her in a kimono with her hair up and, you know, the sticks in her hair and everything. I don't know what those are technically called, but if you check the link here, it's a really nice little sprite. And like they go back to that occasionally in stuff like Hanafuda Card. They'll go back to this kind of kimono design and draw Princess Peach, you know, in kind of like traditional Japanese garb. And so this, you know, even though this is like based on a ROM hack of Super Mario Brothers, which I know we've talked about on here, right?
Oh, the Lost Levels, Mario 2 Japan?
No, All Night Nippon.
Oh, yeah. I think that came up in the weird Mario episode with all the like weirdo games.
Yes, I think so. Yep. Yeah. So even though this is a ROM hack of Mario 2, it's still kind of this one element is sort of entered canon, like the really nice redrawn sprite of Princess Peach became a thing that has become pervasive within the Mario series. So that's great. Any other thoughts on Princess Peach in the first couple of games, or are we content to say like we're happy that she no longer has that sprite?
I think we're all on board with the human sprite element now.
That's where I am.
She was mostly just defined by being in another castle in the original
basically,
game.
Basically, yeah, she was defined by her absence.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I guess we talked about her age. I guess at one point during her creation, it's implied that because she's a princess, naturally there are other royal members of this family and we were only seeing her. But no, there are no other humans that we see. So that would explain why she started as a very young person, because, you know, presumably there's a king and a queen. And we only see the king in the Mario Brothers live action movie. And that's Lance Hendrickson.
That's right. Wow. I remember reading somewhere that he just happened to be on set and they're like, hey, you want to be in the movie? And he's like, hell yeah. So
he's
got that cameo.
He does. He says the immortal line, trust the fungus, I believe.
No,
that was... Peach has good taste for not appearing in the Super Mario movie. It was Princess Daisy instead. So good on her. She knows a bad movie when she sees one.
I'm a Daisy stan, so I kind of feel bad for Daisy. I'm totally like Daisy and Luigi.
Daisy is such an interesting artifact from Mario Land. The fact that she's become she's like the last thing remaining from that particular game. Anyway, that's off topic, but anyway.
Yeah, there's probably an episode in here of like minor Mario characters. We could talk about Daisy and I don't know.
Spike, Foreman Spike.
Well, when are we going to talk about Waluigi?
Never.
we have to clear that with Masahiro Sakurai. he's very opposed to it. Anyway, so Super Mario Brothers was huge. I've read that the Super Mario Brothers strategy guide was the number one best-selling book in Japan for 1986. I don't know if that's true. I might be conflating some things, but I believe it. It was a huge game, massive. And naturally, it was adapted into manga, but also into an anime. And the anime came out the following year, actually, so they must have jumped right into it. That's Peach Hime Kyushutsu Dai Sakusen, the big rescue of Peach or something. I can't remember, Princess Peach. Anyway, I have never actually watched this. I'm always, I don't know, I have a hard time watching video game based media, but it seems okay, you know, just from having skimmed it and reading plot synopses. Has anyone here, I feel like someone here has got to have seen The Great Adventure of Rescuing Princess Peach or whatever it's called.
Oh, I've seen it.
All right, Bob, why don't you walk us through like what her role is in this? And it's one of those like kid video type things where Mario is a real person playing Famicom and then he gets whisked into the video game world.
Yeah, it's very weird in that Mario and Luigi like run a grocery store in this movie for some reason. And
Mario and who?
Mario and Luigi.
Luigi. Oh,
yes.
Okay, sure.
He is in this. They run a grocery store. And yeah, in this movie, Super Mario Brothers is a Famicom game, although it's not really Super Mario Brothers, but they're playing this Famicom game, and that's when Princess Peach comes out of the TV and asks Mario for help, and then she gets pulled back in. So they essentially have to go into the world of a Nintendo game. It's a very tortured origin story. You can tell no one was on the same page about all of this in terms of like how Mario ends up in the Mushroom Kingdom. So yeah, outside of the weird plot stuff, it's just like a fairly competent 80s anime kids movie. It's not like amazing, but it is cool to see like, oh, here's Mario's first voice, and here's like, you know, what the Toads sound like. It's a fun exploration of Mario Mania at that time.
I seem to remember the prince in that video looking very, very, because there was a prince or
yes,
king or something like that, and he looked extremely 80s anime, and I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
yeah, the
by all the ancillary media surrounding Peach in general. There's way more than we've seen in the West, it seems like. And then, of course, in Nintendo Power, they had the manga for Super Mario World some years later. But well, I'm sure we might get to that point a little bit later. But yeah, lots of ancillary media around Princess Peach.
Yeah, so the whole idea of Peach being married is really big in these early that's kind of something that's pervasive around her. Like, everyone wants to make her a child bride. Bowser keeps kidnapping her so that she can marry him. But then in the anime, she gets rescued from Bowser from a wedding, and her reward is that she gets to marry some other prince instead. So, you know, it's just her life is prescribed, basically. She doesn't have a choice.
I think as a princess, you're just currency in that system, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Pretty much like, hey, you're going to make our kingdoms happy together. So go do your duty. Give us some little hybrid babies.
I mean, Peach and Zelda both define the kidnapped princess meme in the entirety of the 8-bit generation. So when your entire personality is being kidnapped, that does kind of make you currency as a character.
Yeah, I feel like Nintendo has done a better job of giving more life to Peach beyond abductee than they have to Zelda. Like, Zelda's just barely broken out of that. But Peach is, yeah, she's got it. And she started to get it in 1988 with Super Mario Bros. 2 for America, where she was a playable character. And, you know, her being enshrined as a playable character really kind of is a matter of happenstance. It actually just kind of happened by accident. We all know the story of Doki Doki Panic and, you know, the Dream Festival and or Dream Factory Festival or whatever it was called. There's a great video on YouTube by Gajillionaire. Go watch that. It's very detailed, tells you all about the origins of Doki Doki Panic. But anyway, Nintendo wanted to bring that game to the US because it was very good. Mm-hmm. And they also wanted to give us a Mario sequel that was very, very good as opposed to the Lost Levels. So they said, why don't we hack our own ROM and put Mario sprites in here, kind of do a reverse of the All Night Nippon Super Mario Brothers thing, and take this game based on Fuji Television characters that we don't own and turn them into Mario characters. And that made perfect sense. And at the time, there were only a few Mario characters, so they all kind of mapped neatly onto the Doki Doki Panic characters. So, you know, Mario, Princess Peach, Toad, just a great kind of translation. And it worked out really well. But again, I think that if there had been more characters in Mario canon for them to work from, then maybe Peach wouldn't have made it into the game. But you know, she did show up, and that's kind of become a defining trait of the character. This was a landmark moment for her that, as Kat mentioned, carries into the Smash Brothers series and carried forward into Super Mario 3D World when they finally decided to revisit the dynamic of this game. So, yeah, I don't know. Does anyone treat Peach as their main in Super Mario 2?
Oh, definitely. She's the most enjoyable character to play in that game. And I think that just being able to float further with her skirt just makes her feel a lot different compared to Toad and Mario and Luigi. And Mario 2 is so interesting just because it's where the characteristics of all four of the characters started to really come into play. The sprites were so much more detailed in this one. This is where Peach starts to really truly look like Peach, even though her hair is kind of brown or strawberry brown or something like that instead of
the NES didn't really have good yellows. So like its color palette is really weird. So light brown is kind of what you get in terms of blonde.
I just find it really interesting how so much of Peach's moveset and her personality and her design were defined in this game, which, as you already mentioned, Jeremy, was in effect a glorified ROM hack.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a whole complicated history around Mario 2 and Doki Doki Panic and how it kind of started as an experiment using Mario assets and, you know, just can we make a Mario-style game where you scroll vertically also? So, you know, it's reductive to say that it's a ROM hack, and I was being glib, but you know, it is an integral part of the Mario series and was not just like why don't we turn this into a Mario game? There's more to it than that. Like, please understand, listeners, we are not disrespecting Mario 2. It's super
no,
good.
Never. My husband, no, just, I love my Mario husband 2. Divorced me if I disrespected Mario 2.
Mario 2 is great. And I think that There was a weird time where Mario 2 was very much disrespected. I remember there was a Screw Attack top 10 that named it one of the worst Mario games. But I think a lot of people have really come around on it in a big way and have decided that, yes, it is a top tier Mario game for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's this whole discussion to be had about how people perceived games at the time versus how they looked back on them versus how they've kind of been reconsidered over time. It's almost like, you know, like with bands or, you know, musicians who are around a long time, they'll be really popular. And then there's like a drop off where people decide, oh, well, you know, they're overplayed, they're cheesy, they're stupid, they're bad. But then after a while, people stop and reconsider and say, oh, you know, either I'm listening ironically, but I kind of like it. Or maybe just say like, hey, wait, this actually is the conventional wisdom is not correct. So I think you get that with video games a lot, too, especially with these NES sequels that did so many things different from the games surrounding them. Simon's Quest is another great example. There are a few others where it's like Zelda 2. You know, they were kind of experimenting and trying to see what worked. And, you know, as I've talked about before, like at the time, there was no firm definition of what Mario meant. Like the Mario concept that we kind of have today until Super Mario Brothers 3 took things back and was like, hey, let's make a game that's like Super Mario Brothers, but just way better and cooler in every respect. And that kind of became, you know, established as this is what Mario is. But in 1988-89, this was as valid an interpretation of Mario as anything else. And, you know, the next year we got Super Mario Land, which was also weird. We got that before Super Mario Brothers 3. So, we had a very different relationship with the Mario series growing up than I think our Japanese counterparts did, because they got Mario, Mario 2, Super Mario Brothers 3, Mario Land, Super Mario World, and then they got the Super Mario USA like a year and a half, almost 2 years after Super Mario World. So, you know, for us, this was kind of like establishing the canon of Mario. For them, it was like, oh, here's like this, you know, game from 5 years ago, but now it's got Mario characters in it. So yeah, just a different experience. But I don't think Mario should be, or Mario 2 should be diminished in any way because of that. And, you know, again, it did give us kind of the canon interpretations of how Toad plays, how Princess Peach plays. It's great.
And as I already mentioned, in Smash Brothers Melee, so much of her moveset is defined by her appearance in Mario 2. So that just tells you all you really need to know.
So, another kind of sign of how important Mario 2 was here, how big it was, you know, and how much of their chips Nintendo put behind it for the US market, is the fact that we basically got a TV series derived from Super Mario Brothers 2, the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. And again, I'm too old to have seen this when it was a new thing, so I can't really speak much to this, but I have a feeling that everyone here has a lot more experience with the Super Show than I do. So I'm going to let you take it away from here.
Yeah, I watched the hell of that stupid thing. I'm actually amazed now looking back at it at how many Canadian celebrities were on it. And I say celebrities in quotes. What's hilarious is King Koopa's voice actor. See, when you live in Southern Ontario, you have this furniture store called Leon's. And you have the Leon's commercials, which are extremely iconic for the narrator. And they're always like kind of humorous and funny. And the narrator for that was King Koopa. And I can hear it so clearly now, but back then, even though I was absolutely obsessed with the Mario cartoon and I heard like Leon's commercials 25 billion times a day, I did not make that connection. And to this day, I look at myself and say, what is wrong with you, Nadia? Like, how did that slide you by? And I knew it was kind of a crummy series, except for the live action bits, which are actually a lot smarter than I gave them credit for when I was a kid. But that and the Super Mario 3 cartoon, which we'll also get into, those were the reasons why I ultimately wrote my Super Mario 3 fan fiction in grade 6. And it was just like full of swearing and princess rescuing herself. And I wrote about it for US Gamer if you want to go back and read that. So, because I still have it, unfortunately. So yeah, I watched it.
I've podcasted about this a few times, and it's an interesting series in that it's a mix of both Mario 1 and 2, but it's heavier on the 2. It is interesting to go back and look at this because... going back to look at the original anime, Mario in that one, he does have a high-pitched voice. So from the beginning, people were looking at Mario and saying, like, oh, he's got a high-pitched voice. He's a squeaky voice character. But when America had to define him up until, you know, his voice actor would define his character in Mario 64, he was always like this. He was like a big gruff guy. Yeah. And not even like an Italian accent or anything like that. It was just like a gruff-voiced man.
He's a short, fat guy. That's probably what explains why.
So how did the series treat Princess Peach, or Toadstool, I guess? I get the impression she was kind of a minor character here.
She was always with them, like solving adventures and things like that. The Mario Brothers Super Show was basically like, let's just do a bunch of public domain stories and some movie parodies, but put these characters in the roles and have everything be like a Koopa pun or a pasta pun or whatever. And with both this one and the Zelda cartoon, I think it was more like late 80s feminism creeping into cartoons, because it was like, no, the girl will fight alongside the guy, but also get kidnapped in the third act so we can have some sort of, you know, complication.
Yes, Zelda's very much an action girl in the Zelda cartoon.
Yeah, it was, I did like the Zelda cartoon a lot more than the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. But it's funny, even though I watched the cartoon Super Mario Brothers Super Show and I remember it quite well, I don't remember any Peach doing anything particularly special other than tagging along. I don't even remember she got kidnapped often by Koopa. It just is not in my mind. It doesn't register to me at all.
So in this era of Princess Peach's history, she was very much an adherent of the Smurfette principle, where every ensemble has a girl, and that's kind of their defining trait, is that they're the girl.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. She was there, period.
The Susan Richards of the team.
Exactly.
They have to write letters occasionally, or write to letter writers occasionally and say, no, she is valuable. Just because she doesn't do anything in our stories, that doesn't mean she's a bad character. It just means we suck at writing.
I remember in the Super Mario Brothers 3 show, she was a little bit more proactive. I seem to remember an episode where she takes a vacation and goes to the human world and goes to Hawaii. And I liked that episode as a kid. But
I was going to say, we all know she loves Milli Vanilli in the concerts.
Oh, my God.
We've all seen it.
I'm going to blank that out. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much.
I do feel like parents' groups were keeping a closer eye on kids' TV around the late 80s as it was being reformed. And if they weren't, it would be every episode would be Saving the Princess. But instead, it's usually King Koopa menacing a new toad civilization in every episode. Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, I guess you could say Super Mario Brothers 3 and World kind of represent a step back for Peach in terms of her agency and self-determination. I will say Super Mario Brothers 3, even though you do save her in the end, that is not the initial premise of the game. The initial premise is that a bunch of kings all throughout the kingdom, I don't know how this works exactly. It's like a mushroom empire, maybe. But a bunch of the kings throughout the lands have been transformed under a curse. And so Princess Peach is like, Mario, go help save, you know, these kings from their curse. Get the magic wand back and turn them back from their cursed forms. And she'll occasionally send you like jewels and stuff, you know, the peewings to give you a little perk, you know, a little boost through some of the harder stages. And it's only when you rescue the seventh king and you think, I'm done, that it turns out this has all been a distraction and Bowser was using his children's schemes to distract Mario so he could snag Princess Peach and whisk her back to the hellish place where he lives.
Dark World is so metal. I still love Dark World. Like, I still go over the bridge with the hands and it still freaks me out because you don't know what's going to come up and grab you. And whose hand is that? That's what I want to know.
I know that Mario 3 is supposed to be a play or something to that effect.
Yeah.
In my own interpretation, I've always seen it as the one time that Bowser got extremely serious about trying to take over that particular world. And so brought up all the stops, his entire fleet, his navy, his air force, his everything. And then he was finally defeated. He's like, yeah, screw it. I'm going into retirement. I'm going on vacation.
I'm going to buy a clown car. Fly around.
The question I have about Mario 3 is I referenced the joke at the end, which is fairly famous in English, but I'm wondering, was that joke in the Japanese version? Because I'm pretty sure it wasn't. Was there a joke in the Japanese version?
I think it was just a very straightforward message in the Japanese version. Like I said, that was the first time I think you really saw Nintendo of America's localizer say, you know what? We can have fun with this. We can give our game some personality. They don't have to be, you know, just straight-laced translations. So yeah, a small addition they made, but it's one that really makes the game memorable.
It also gives Peach a little bit of personality because she told a joke.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty good. And I have to say for Super Mario Bros. 3, even though the princess kind of receded back into her, oh no, save me mode, we did get Wendy O. And we got a female villain. And I thought that was really cool as a kid.
The one female in the ensemble. So yeah, the Mario Advance games actually add a little bit of context, sort of preview cinematic to all the games. And in this case, Mario 3, which was Super Mario Advance 4, you actually see her send Mario off to help the various kings before she's abducted herself. And, you know, that actually carries forward into Super Mario World, where in that game, she was just abducted. But in Super Mario Advance 2, she actually ends up on the dinosaur island because she's hot air ballooning and she drifts off course. And she lands, and then Mario's like, oh, we've got to go find her. So that sets the adventure in motion. So, you know, at least there she's doing something interesting. She's like, hey, I'm going to sail the world in a hot air balloon. Not the best idea to do that without any kind of guidance or assistance if you're, you know, the leader of an entire country. But, you know, everyone makes their crazy
follow
mistakes.
Follow your bliss.
That's right. So these games did inspire more cartoons, The Adventures of Super Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World, which were not the exact same as the Super Show, but kind of have always struck me as having a similar kind of character. Am I wrong there?
Well,
no. Oh, sorry, Bob.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. We're both stumbling over to each other to say, no, Jeremy, they're different.
No. Okay.
In that, so two. So Mario Super Show is a mix of live action stuff and then a cartoon that's a mix of Mario 1 and 2. The Mario 3 cartoon is just straight up Mario 3 stuff to the point where every episode begins with like video of a world map from the game. And then Mario World is just basically them writing worse versions of the Flintstones. And I think they took a look at like, oh, Dinosaur World. Yes, they interact with cavemen in this cartoon. There are no cavemen in the game. And the entire series, there's a new breakout character, like a Poochie-style character named Oogtar. And a lot of the episodes are about like teaching Oogtar how to be a human in the modern world.
They already had Yoshi. Why did they need Oogtar? I don't understand that. But yeah, Super Mario Bros. 3 compared to the Super Show, the main difference is that Super Mario Bros. 3 really adhered more to the game lore, if you could call it that, versus making a movie and book parodies like they did in the first one.
Okay, so I don't feel bad about missing those, but I am happy that I did follow the greatest kind of contemporary interpretation of the Mario series, which was Super Mario Adventures and Nintendo Power, written by Kentaro Takekuma and illustrated by Charlie Nozawa. And that was a serialized adventure across, like, I don't know, a year and a half worth of comics or of Nintendo Power issues, and had a kind of a finite story from start to finish. And there, in that version, the princess is kind of a badass.
Mm-hmm. The princess is like 2 seconds away from committing murder in every panel in that comic. Like, she is unhinged.
She's very memorable. Yeah.
A lot of kids had their sexual awakening when she dressed up as Luigi.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, in addition to cross-dressing, she also basically does things with bob-ombs and is constantly like kind of standing aggressively and saying, I'm not going to put up with this crap. She does eventually get hypnotized into marrying Bowser and is, you know, saved from that at the last second by Mario. But on the whole, she's a very proactive character and has it much more together than Mario and crew. So a really great interpretation of her. I believe that was reprinted a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah, I have it.
Viz. And it's still in print, so you can buy for like $10. So highly recommended. It's great. A timeless and classic and extremely well illustrated and very funny interpretation of the Mario series that really, really adds a lot, I think, to the character of Peach.
I just want to observe that this particular, like, these comics and such show how effortlessly Mario can lend itself to a really entertaining animated series, which makes the decision to turn it into a live action movie that has like cyberpunk elements all the more baffling.
Yeah, but man, those sets still whip ass.
They do.
Looking back at that movie.
Yeah, apparently that was filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is
in a cement
like an
factory.
Hour and a half. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours from where I live. And there are still, I think there's like a bar that has chunks of the set. I haven't actually been there, but my understanding is that you can like go to a bar and see hunks of the Mario movie set.
You can get your photo taken with Big Bertha.
I would do that. I would go on that pilgrimage. I honestly would.
All right. Next time I'm in Wilmington, I'll look that up.
Please do.
All right, so we move back into the video game realm with NES Open Tournament Golf, which is a greatly improved version of NES Golf. It's kind of based on, it's got kind of a weird, like, semi-localized heritage. It started out as, like, an expansion of NES Golf for Famicom Disk System and then didn't come to the U.S. for, like, 4 years. And they totally overhauled it. And, you know, in addition to adding Mario as the duffer there, both Peach and Daisy show up as caddies. And I think it's really bold of Mario to take a you know, teenage girl royalty and say, okay, you carry my clubs around. But, you know, that's golf for you.
I'm looking at the art for this game, and I like how they gave Peach and Daisy, like, shorter skirts for the summer presumably summer antics of this golf tournament. And also, I do enjoy Mario and Luigi's hideous, like American flag themed overalls.
Yeah, the stripes.
I think it's a super cute outfit.
Well, no, you know, it was based on a Golf USA course in Japan. So that explains the stars and stripes theming. Anyway, that was kind of a minor sidebar for Peach, but she finally got to return as a playable character, taking the wheel of her own destiny in Super Mario Kart from the Super NES onward. She's always been one of the primary playable characters in Super Mario Kart. And this has also done a lot to kind of canonize her and define her in, you know, future sports titles and other games where you have characters with different attributes. So she was one of 8 characters, I believe, in Mario Kart, and was classified as a light character alongside, I want to say, Toad and Yoshi?
Koopa Troopa.
Well,
was Yoshi in that one? Could you call Yoshi?
She was paired. Medium. It was pairs of characters with similar abilities. So it was Peach and Yoshi and Koopa and Toad, Koopa Troopa and Toad. And then it was Bowser and Donkey Kong and Mario and Luigi. Those are all like the pairs of characters with similar abilities.
Got it. Okay. I didn't realize it worked quite that way, but yes, that makes sense. So as a light character, she has great acceleration, very good at, you know, cornering with good handling, great at getting kind of like a running start at the beginning of a race, but kind of sucks on long straightaways because her top speed is pretty low. So, you know, against a character who has the heavyweight class and a more powerful engine, she's at a disadvantage in the long straightaways, the sort of straightforward courses. And she's also at a disadvantage against the stronger characters because they can easily bump her out of the way.
Or flatten her.
So you don't want to flatten her. Yes. So you don't want to get into a scuffle with Donkey Kong, is what I'm saying. Donkey Kong Jr.
Mario Kart is where she started to get her best outfits. Like, I'm looking at a shot of her from Mario Kart Wii where she's riding a motorcycle and she has her hair up. And I really like her hair back in the ponytail. She's wearing like a jumpsuit, racing jumpsuit for maximum airflow or being streamlined or something like that. And I love when we were alluding to this earlier with Mario Odyssey, but I love when Peach has a chance to get out of her traditional outfit and have a little bit of fun.
Yeah. She has like a motorcycle outfit because thinking of that, like what a nightmare would be if she's riding with that big flowy dress and it just kind of got caught up in the gears. That would just be something else.
So Mario Kart Wii is interesting because not only did that add the motorcycles and give her the cool motorcycle outfit, kind of Evel Knievel looking, it also is the game where her weight class was changed. I guess maybe this is the point where she went from teenager to adult. She went from being lightweight class to medium weight class. I think they did that because they added the baby characters.
Kill me now.
One thing
who are all, you know, super lightweight class.
Baby Peach is kind of cute.
And like all baby the Rosalina. Babies need to go into a dumpster and something.
Yeah,
like,
that's
down
true.
Niagara Falls.
Not a fan.
Very Republican of you, Nick, Nadia.
In the Super,
once they're born, toss them in the dumpster.
In the Super Nintendo.
And they have to go down Niagara Falls. We're getting that part.
Well, that just makes it fun for everybody, right? Everybody watching. Well, see, the thing about this game is the first Super Nintendo game, Peach has been censored. Because her winning animation when you're on the little platforms with the champagne, she's chugging that. She's chugging that champagne.
She slams it.
Yeah,
back
and her face is all red too. So I like that little joke about her that is not ever brought over here. She's a bit of a lush.
What you're saying is Mario Kart is a monument to Peach's secret drinking problem?
It is, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Peach the teen alcoholic, yep. I mean, she's got the burden of running that whole kingdom on her shoulders. And the Toads don't really seem like you can count on them for much. So I kind of feel like she has to do everything herself.
Yeah. She's running the kingdom. She always struck me as a kind of a rich, spoiled kid who has a lot of retainers waiting on her hand and foot. And then sometimes she goes on adventures. Like, I don't think she's, you know, setting the tax rate for the Mushroom Kingdom or whatever.
No, there's probably like one Toad who can do math. Probably Toadsworth. He can do math and he sets the taxes. But I mean, I feel like when you look at the Toads, they're not the most reliable. I mean, it's possible that the Mushroom Kingdom doesn't actually have infrastructure at all. And that, you know, the houses they live in are actually just mushrooms. like a big mushroom grows and they sort of hollow out the inside by eating mushroom, you know, omelets or something for a few weeks. And then they've got a place to live. I don't know.
What you're saying is the Mushroom Kingdom is an autonomous collective?
Maybe. But then what need do they have for a princess?
Well, sometimes she's a spearhead.
Sometimes they have spears, and sometimes they just kind of run around screaming and waving those spears, like when when a Koopa invades. That's all they do.
Are you secretly a toad, Nadia?
Oh, yeah.
I think
how long you know me, Jeremy?
I think there's some sort of democracy we don't know about, and the royal family is allowed to exist for, like, tourism reasons.
Okay. Like the royal family in Canada, they're on our money, and it's like, that's about it. Princess Margaret is a party in Toronto. That's it.
All right. So, in any case, the figurehead ruler of the kingdom occasionally gets into potentially dangerous situations, racing cars against her nemesis, who constantly kidnaps her. I guess that makes sense to someone. But yes, Mario Kart, great series. And Peach is always, you know, I always prefer the lighter weight characters. So I do play racist Peach a lot. I have to admit that once Daisy started to become kind of a regular, I tended to gravitate more toward her just because she constantly reminds you what her name is. And that's it's really annoying to other people when you win with Daisy and you just remind them that you are Daisy.
When she passes by you, never mind that on the course, she's like, "Hi, I'm Daisy." And her voice just kind of phased out as she goes off on the horizon.
She is such a great troll character, whereas Peach is much more, you know, straightforward. Like, Princess Daisy is the one who gets, you know, dethroned and probably executed in an uprising.
Oh, dear.
Whereas I think the people tend to love, you know, the benevolent Princess Peach.
How would you
Daisy
rate...
would not go down fighting. She would go down without fight, though.
How would you rank the princesses, like, in tiers?
In terms of, like, racing quality or as,
no,
like,
just
human
in general.
Beings?
Like, in general, yeah. 1, 2, 3. I want to hear it.
So what princesses are there? There's
Rosalina, Daisy,
Rosalina,
and Peach.
Oh, right, Rosalina.
Yeah,
Rosalina is my number one. She's not even a princess.
Yeah,
she's a god. She's an Evangelion god. Like, did you not see the end of Super Mario Galaxy? I still don't get it. All I know is I'm watching something real screwed up that Nintendo never let happen again.
I think Nintendo likes Rosalina better than Peach these days.
I like Rosalina better than Peach.
She has a better design.
Well, I mean, you know, they got to start fresh 20 years after the creation of Peach, so sure. They could, you know, bring that into the whole thing. She's also got her little star kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, little Lumas. They're cute.
I don't know. I like Rosalina a lot. But like I said, why must we always pit women against one another? Why can't we appreciate all of them as great
characters
who all have worthwhile roles in the video games? I will play Mario Kart with any of the princesses at any time. Also, Isabelle.
Look, Jeremy, I work for IGN now, so I have to rank everything.
My ranking days are done. I shower now. I'm no longer rank. Now that I'm out of the press. I even wash my clothes, too. Anyway, the Mario Kart series has been kind of a very prominent place for Peach to compete against, you know, just to kind of hold her own against other characters and to have her kind of personality defined. Even if it is mostly just saying, Peach has got it, and I like to drink a lot. So the next video game appearance of Princess Peach is not a Mario game. It is a Zelda game. The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. She does not actually appear in the game. But she is a tool for catfishing. It's very tragic.
Oh, right.
Yeah, poor Will Wright.
Her name is Christine.
And she doesn't eat paper, not at all.
She was playable in Yoshi's Cookie, which unfortunately that's the least. Is that the least or the best of the Yoshi puzzle games? I can't remember.
Oh, that's the best one.
Oh, okay.
By far. It's because they took an existing game and just put Yoshi things in it.
That's always a good idea, yeah. Okay, so she's playable in multiplayer, but this is not a multiplayer game like, what do you call it, Puyo Puyo, or, I don't know, one of those type games where every character has their own unique stats and traits. So she's just like a different character to play as, but doesn't confer any special abilities onto you. But she does have unique traits in the game Mario and Wario, which never came to the US. It was a Super Famicom game. Played ideally with the Super Famicom Super NES mouse and was very heavily inspired by Lemmings. I don't know if any of you have experience with this one, but it's It's an interesting one. I'm happy yeah. that I was able to pick up a complete copy of it a few years back.
I played
it's pretty rad.
A few levels of it emulated with a mouse, and I don't know why they didn't bring it over here, because if anything, we needed more Super NES mouse games, and it's a fairly yeah. high-quality game made by, I think, is Game Freak make this?
Game Freak, yeah.
Yeah, I thought yeah. so.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
It's a good game. It's failure to make it here. It was like 94, 95. And like, you know, the Super NES was still kind of in need of good support at that point against Saturn, PlayStation, mm-hmm. 32X, I guess. So yeah, I don't understand why they didn't bring this over. There's nothing in it that's, you know, controversial or inappropriate. There's nothing in it that's like too weird for Americans. It's just, you know, the premise is Wario being the totally rotten dude that he is, decides to wreak havoc on Mario by dropping a bucket on his head. So Mario is wandering around aimlessly because he can't see, because he has a bucket on his head and I guess lacks the ability to pull the bucket off of his head. So you control a little fairy that kind of protects Mario by creating blocks or moving blocks, basically, you know, changing the layout of the level while Mario stumbles through and you try to get him to safety. You can also have Peach play, you know, as your playable character with a bucket on her head. And despite her proven competence in other realms, she is also not able to remove the bucket from her own head. And therefore, you have to protect her. She plays differently because she moves more slowly than Mario, which, you know, gives you more time to kind of look at the layouts of the level, say, oh, I need to put blocks here to kind of get ahead of her and guide her to safety. But it also means that when there are timed elements, you know, like traps and things like that, her timing is a lot tighter because she moves through them more slowly. So there's kind of a give and take with her, but it's a one of her least known roles.
Maybe the bucket is filled with rubber cement and you're taking her to the hospital, because that's the only answer I could think of here.
Okay, rubber cement.
It does posit the characters
that
are
holding it out of her hair.
It does posit the characters are too stupid to remove a bucket from their own heads.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the best look, but you know, it's video games. So, and Wario couldn't do anything to actually kill them. So I guess they had to come up with something. Anyway, after Mario and Wario, Peach made her sporting debut in Mario's Tennis for Virtual Boy, which I believe is her only Virtual Boy appearance. It's also one of her best character sprites, because Virtual Boy had such large resolution, high resolution, pixel resolution, but it used bitmap graphics for the most part. So right. A lot of the games on Virtual Boy have really great sprites, better than like Game Boy sprites and sometimes even Super NES sprites, like just really nice looking sprites. And her sprite in Mario's Tennis for Virtual Boy is very kind of definitive. But as far as I can tell from having played the game, characters don't really seem to have any appreciable differences. Maybe they're supposed to, but I kind of feel like they all play the same in this one. But in future Mario Tennis games, the ones that, you know, where you play as Mario characters and not like, you know, the Camelot ones where you create your own generic character and play against Mario opponents, she tends to be physically weaker than the other tennis players, you know, the Marios and the Donkey Kongs and the Bowsers. But she's what is called a technique player, a technique character, where she's very good, very precise with landing her shots and her special moves. So you can very accurately shoot across the court and send your opponent diving for the ball, or, you know, pull off a special move that you land right, you know, just grazing the line to get it in bounds, whereas other characters would be out of bounds. So for those who have, you know, a certain amount of skill and precision with characters, she's a great choice.
In the instruction manual I'm looking at, she is trying very hard. She's smacking the ball very hard. And right next to her is Yoshi, who is seemingly confused by the concept of tennis and is trying to eat the racket. So
it's a very, funny drawing.
That's why I never play as Yoshi in Mario in sports games. He'll see the ball and just think, oh, it's another apple. Time to eat it.
Matt, I've got a great idea for a podcast. You and me, we watch movies, right? And some of them are kind of bad, and so we make fun of them. But maybe some of them are good.
Chris, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And eat snacks. Movie Fighters, an original idea on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Take a time machine back to before the world went to hell around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad.
The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
If you're cool enough,
join us and listen to Less Than 2000, because that's all we talk about.
Adam and Chad live Less Than 2000.
So from here, we get into a new era for Princess Peach, which is the one where she got to be named Princess Peach in America. Yes, this is Super Mario 64, where Peach introduces you to the game, and they do the little Hunt for Red October subtitle trick to kind of change her name. Like, you remember in Hunt for Red October, everyone's speaking in Russian. All the Russians are speaking in Russian. And they're subtitled, but then they start speaking in English and the subtitles carry forward and the subtitles stop. So you kind of get that transition into, like, you understand they're speaking Russian, but, you know, you're hearing English on screen. They kind of did the same thing with her name here, where she's like, come to the castle. I'm going to make you a cake. Princess Toadstool. Peach.
Peach.
And from that point on, they just call her Peach.
That kind of confused me when I was playing this game at first as, like, a 14-year-old, because I thought, is Peach, like, a way to sign off on a letter? Does she mean peace?
That's what I thought, too. I was
Peach,
like,
out, bro.
Yeah, when she said Peach, I thought that was just a nice message to Mario, question mark? I don't know.
I had read somewhere that her name was being changed to Peach, so I knew what to anticipate. That was Leslie Swann, too. That was the when she used to voice Princess Peach.
Yep. Now she does more, like, localization and stuff. She was the editor, I believe, on the Mario Adventures compilation from a few years ago. So
yeah, she's been with Nintendo for a very long time. I think she was originally with Nintendo Power.
Yep. And, I guess you could have said, oh, Peach, it's going to be a peach cake. That makes sense. I think also I had read that Princess Peach's name was always Peach, and they were finally changing it away from Toadstool in the U.S., so for whatever reason, I totally understood what they were going for there, because I'm so media savvy, by God. Anyway, this one is pretty much Princess Peach is kidnapped right from the start, and that's pretty much it. The notable additions to canon are that her name is Peach, and she likes to bake. This is a new facet of her personality that had not been explored, not even in Yoshi's Cookie.
Oh, good point. That was a missed opportunity right there.
Mm-hmm. And that actually kind of carries through, I guess, to Game & Watch Gallery 2, which is a collection of remakes, Game Boy remakes of Game & Watch games. Peach appears throughout a few of the different Game & Watches, but usually you play as Mario or a Toad. But in one of the games on Game & Watch Gallery 2, Chef, she is the playable character, because naturally, as a woman, she should be the one in the kitchen slaving away, flipping sausages for Yoshi, flipping eggs.
It was very introspective of Nintendo developers to be like, what do women do? Well, they get kidnapped. What else? Let's think. They cook things for us. Yes.
That's right.
Beautiful. Got it.
I mean, I love the Game of Watch galleries, but it is a little galling that the only time in all four of those galleries that Peach is playable is for the one where she's in the kitchen. You can do better than that, Nintendo. Come on. Come on.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Well, there are multiple moments when Nintendo could do better with Peach, but...
Yeah, that's true.
I don't mind that she's super into cooking cakes, because it just means that she should be the next host of Cake Boss or something like that. I'd watch that.
That'd be cool.
Princess Peach, I love that guy. I did forget to mention another playable role for Peach, only in Japan, only for Super Famicom, for Satellaview, Excitebike Boon Boon Stadium, which was basically just a kind of an upgraded remake of Excitebike, I think based on Excitebike Versus for Famicom Disk System, another one that didn't come over here for years. And because it's a reskin of Excitebike, all the racers are the same, But beginning in episode 3 and carrying forward into the final episode, episode 4, you could play as Princess Peach. And, you know, I say episodes because that's what they were called, but it's not like there was a storyline. It was just like, hey, here's a new set of tracks for you to play on your Satellaview. So I feel like this is one that at some point they could reissue, you know, and publish in the U.S. They could probably give it a name besides Boon Boon Stadium, because that sounds kind of weird in English.
Nintendo will put this on Switch Online instead of like Earthbound or Mario RPG.
I mean, I'd take it, like put this in, what is it, Sutehakun, you know, some of those other Famicom or Satellaview exclusive games. Get those on Nintendo Switch Online. That would actually be worth it.
I think that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I can play Earthbound and Super Mario RPG on a million other places. Give me Bon Bon Super Mario Excite Bike, whatever's going on here.
All right, so we have moved into the left behind the Super Famicom era altogether, moved on to the N64 for good, which is kind of short, but we do have the Mario Party series, where of course Princess Peach is playable, but does anyone care?
Not really.
Nah.
I still have lasting resentment to Mario Party, because it meant that people wanted to play that instead of Smash Brothers back in the N64 days.
Oh, I feel that. Mm. Yeah, I feel that.
Well, and speaking of Smash Brothers, I always forget that she was not in the original. Like, I feel like she's such an iconic character. How can you not have a Princess Peach? But no, they did not have a Princess Peach until Melee for GameCube. Mm-hmm. Like, that's scandalous to me.
I remember thinking when Melee came out, they were like, oh, Peach is going to be in it. And I'm like, how the heck are they going to translate Peach to Melee? And the answer is brilliantly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. She uses her subjects as terrified, screaming, living meat shields.
There we go. That's what the toads are useful for. We had this whole conversation a while back.
She is a tyrant. That's unacceptable.
Absolutely.
So she entered the Smash Brothers series with Melee and has become a mainstay of the series, because that is an additive series. It is not subtractive. It just piles on more and more stuff. And now I think there's like 3 versions of Peach you can play as. Is that right? Or is it just 2? You can play as Baby Peach now, right?
No, I mean...
No.
Can you not, smash as the
baby? You can play as Daisy,
yeah,
but it's just a palette swap. She's pretty much the same.
Got it. Yeah, you know, I don't play Smash Brothers, so I get it kind of conflated with Mario.
Let the babies in there so they can get punted across the stage. That'd be fantastic.
It should just be stacked on top of each other in an overcoat as one character.
That'd be pretty funny, actually.
They could launch each other out of the overcoat as a projectile attack.
That's
into
brilliant.
It.
Yeah.
Someone write to Sakurai.
Her Ultimate Smash puts everybody to sleep, right?
I think so.
I think it's derived in part from Super Princess Peach, but I could be wrong.
I think it's derived from... There's a song.
Yeah, there is a song.
Yeah, there's like a lullaby that Peach sings. And I can't remember when that debuted, but I feel like that's all kind of tied up into the same thing. Isn't the lullaby like based on the sleeping piranha plant flower in Mario 64? I'm probably just making stuff up at this point, but my canon sounds really good. So,
I think your canon. I'm
into your canon.
Yeah, that's great. Fantastic. Thanks, Nintendo. I will accept my consulting fee in Bitcoin.
It's coming right away.
Yeah, right. They can Venmo me. So now we move on to what might be Princess Peach's greatest role. Oh, you know what? I skipped Mario RPG, because I always do that, because I hate that game.
It's a good game.
Sure.
It's a great RPG. We did an episode about it.
You guys can talk about Mario RPG, and then we'll go into the Thousand Year Door.
There's nothing better than a 15-hour RPG. Wouldn't you just give your life for that at this point in your life? Just like an RPG you can finish? I just finished the epilogue of Dragon Quest XI at 150 hours. I want another 15-hour RPG now.
That's
the host of Axe of the Blood God. I have to agree. I love a good 15-hour RPG that I can finish and talk about.
Actually like Mario RPG, except when it gets to Seaside Town, I usually give up because it really slows down. Like, I hate that submerged ship level. It just... Can't stand it. So slow.
I do love the curveballs that the game throws you in that Bowser joins your party. And also, once you save Peach, the game is half over. And she's Toadstool in that game, of course. But then she joins your party. And she is one of the most overpowered characters in that she can heal everyone. And she also has a very strong final weapon. And it's not too hard to get.
Yeah, she can really slap characters around, quite literally.
Okay, I don't actually hate the game. I'm just extremely unexcited by it. It's just, I don't know. I played it, I powered through it back in the day, but never really connected with it. And I've gone back and tried to revisit it and just can't get into it. But I do like the way they treated Princess Peach for sure. And it's full of, you know, some fun details. The battle system, I like in theory, but I think it worked better in, you know, some of the kind of subsequent games. But with Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door, Peach becomes an integral part of the adventure. And it shows what happens when Princess Peach is abducted. And it turns out she's not just sitting there wringing her hands saying, oh, help me. She's actually very proactive and does her part to kind of thwart the villains. And you play as Peach throughout The Thousand Year Door in these little sort of interstitial chapters between the main chapters of the game. And they're so good. There's always some sort of different mechanic to mess with. There's stealth. There's like dance games. There's quiz games. And the whole time you're interacting with this computer that slowly falls in love with Princess Peach and betrays its creators because she's just the best. And it's really fun. And then in the end, she's possessed by the villain. It's very X-Men, very Chris Claremont body horror kind of thing. But you're forced to fight as Princess Peach because she's been possessed by the Shadow Queen. But, you know, even then, Peach overcomes her mystical enslavement or whatever you want to call it, her mind control, and helps Mario overcome the final boss by sharing her power with him. So it's just a fantastic role. I really, like, every time the perspective shifted to Princess Peach, I was just like, yes, it's another Peach chapter. This rules.
She
Dark
also
Peach
has
just a lot of fun.
And she also has her own solo stuff in the first Paper Mario as well.
Oh, wow. It's been so long, I don't remember that.
Yep. In fact, she teams up with a character named Twink. And even when I was an innocent 19-year-old, I was like, you can't just name a character Twink. That means something else.
Sorry.
Okay. You know, it's been 20 years since I last played that. I played it when it was brand new and loved it and have not revisited it. So maybe that's a thing to do for this year.
It's also a fairly tidy RPG, like 20, 25 hours.
Yeah, I feel like Paper Mario like got all the stuff that I thought was interesting about Mario RPG and really brought it together in a game that I just found much more satisfying and interesting. I don't know. It's all perspective. It's fine if, you know, people can like different things. It's all good. But Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door was really the one that stuck with me. And I remember reviewing that for 1UP back in the early days of 1UP.com and just loved the damn thing. It was so good. 2004 was a great year for Nintendo.
And I will say,
so many good games that year.
You know, it's been 17 years. You've had your fun with your sticker stars and your color splashes and your Origami Kings. Just make another regular game. I'm sick of it.
I really liked Origami King. I thought that was really great.
It's been almost 20 years. You can make, you've already made
a collection on Switch.
Yes, please. And make it available for 4 days.
Of course.
I mean, anyone who doesn't buy that day one, like what's your problem?
That's a good point too.
All right. So from there, we move on to the one game that was actually a starring role for Princess Peach. No Mario, no Toads. They're all kidnapped and abducted. The worm has turned, and now it's time for Princess Peach to come into her own as Super Princess Peach. And they almost did a good thing here, but they kind of whiffed it.
Kinda, yeah. People have kind of come around on Super Princess Peach in recent years.
I've always liked it, but I just feel like the presentation of it, the premise of her emotion powers, could have been a little more thoughtfully rendered. I don't know. Like,
we'll say the least. Yeah,
you're right. But wasn't the whole premise like everybody is overly emotional in
it? Is
just,
but the fact remains that they said, okay, so we've got a game. It's a Mario game, but Mario is not the hero. Now it's Princess Peach. So what's her defining trait? Well, she's a princess. Okay, so how do you turn that into a power? You really don't. But she can float. We'll give her an umbrella so she can float, and she can use the umbrella to whack stuff. That's cool. But also, you know, she's a girl, and you know, dames are just so emotional. We got the problem with these skirts is they're just so emotional. You just can't let them do anything without them just flying off the handle, getting angry, just bawling. So that's a real 1950s Cary Grant kind of approach to game design right there.
Yeah, the main power up.
I'm honestly surprised that at some point, you know, Cary Grant doesn't show up and to spank her. Like that's the kind of premise we're talking about here.
The main power up in this game should be Lexapro.
So, you know, it is a very well-made platformer. It's developed by Tosei, and it's one of those examples of like, hey, if you give Tosei guidance and money and support, they will make very good games for you. It's one of the last really nicely crafted 2D sprite-based Nintendo games. And, you know, the structure is a little bit Yoshi's Island, where the levels are not just, you know, left, right, you get to the end, you're done. But you have to kind of explore around a little bit, activate switches and things like that. And, you know, sometimes use your powers. It's just that the powers happen to be crying, being angry, being gloomy, or being really happy. And, you know, when Princess Peach experiences these emotions through the power of the vibe, it causes everyone to feel these emotions and can affect the environment around her.
But hey, she has her vibe scepter and she's very happy about it, so you know.
Oh, right.
All right, well, yeah.
That's her sidekick. That's her sidekick Itachi in this game.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've always been fond of this game. It's just, you know, it has kind of the very obvious upfront problems, but a very nicely made platformer. And I would love to see Nintendo revisit the concept just in a less sort of stereotypical way.
I never got to play it, and I was always interested in it because even though, yeah, it is a little bit problematic, the artwork and the premise, like just the, not necessarily the emotional woman part of it, but just like the whole design seemed like it was pretty good for a Mario game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like
yeah,
to see...
Yeah, I would say... Oh,
I always like to see games made in the Yoshi's Island style that aren't bad Yoshi's Island sequels.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, and unfortunately, Peach's next playable, technically not playable, but playable role was in exactly that.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yoshi's Island sequel, Yoshi's Island DS, which they were going to call Yoshi's Island 2. And at some point, the marketing team was like, this is probably not the one we want to hang our sequel number onto. So it's Yoshi's Island 2, and this one combines all the things you love. Really awkward double screen mechanics with a gap in the middle, so there's like dead space that you can't see what's happening. Also the baby characters.
Yay!
So, you know, the original Yoshi's Island, Yoshi was carrying Mario around. And you had to protect Mario, baby Mario, and get him to safety. And if he was knocked off, he would cry, float around until you grabbed him again. So here it takes that premise and gives you lots of babies, including, I want to say, is there a baby Wario in here? Maybe not. Baby Donkey Kong,
I think
baby
there
Peach.
Okay, is a baby Wario in this game.
Yeah, I think so. I think those are the four characters.
How does he cry? Wah, wah.
Probably. You know, probably sounds just like his real sound.
There have been better. There's better Yoshi's Island sequels than this, but I feel like Yoshi's Island 1 was basically everyone who wasn't making Mario 64 making what they thought would be the last 2D platformer ever. You can't make a better game than that. You can't make a game as good as that. So I feel like every one of these games, I just say, why bother? Even the 3DS one, which is way better, I just was like, oh, I could just be playing Yoshi's Island 1.
What, new Yoshi's Island?
Yeah.
That game doesn't have a reason to exist, actually.
Exactly.
It has really big eggs sometimes, and that's it. That's what it offers. I do like the kind of crafted games.
The crafty ones are cute. I actually did enjoy Woolly World quite a bit. It doesn't try to be Yoshi's Island Part 2 or anything like that, which is to its credit for sure.
Yeah, they take those mechanics and they turn it into something different. But Yoshi's Island DS does not.
No.
And it's a really busted, kind of unfun game. And it shouldn't be. It should be really good. Like, so the thing about the characters here is that, you know, depending on which baby you have, and you go to changing stations, which is cute. Like, you don't change the diaper, you change the baby. So you put a different baby on Yoshi's back, and that gives Yoshi different abilities. Well, actually, I guess the baby's doing stuff. But in any case, like, you know, Donkey Kong, baby Donkey Kong can climb vines. But baby Peach gives Yoshi the hover jump, like extend his hover jump. and to ride updrafts so he can get to higher platforms. So there is like this kind of built-in puzzle element to a lot of the stages. And, you know, Peach is integral to solving those puzzles, like having her as one of, as Yoshi's cargo, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it just doesn't work. It's so disappointing. Heartbreaking.
I never played Yoshi's Island DS, which people were shortening as YIDS. And I said, do you really want to do that?
Oh,
and
Jesus.
They did it anyway.
Oh, God. It's like Trails in the Sky.
Trails in the... Oh, dear.
some acronyms just need to be thought out a little more carefully.
But I just remember being really disappointed because I had discovered quite late that Yoshi's Island was a brilliant game that a lot of people overlooked because they were probably saving up for the N64 by that time or the PlayStation or whatever. So when I heard, new one for the DS, and at first glance, it looks fantastic. And then to find out it was actually kind of crummy, that was a big disappointment.
Yeah, Nintendo was doing that a lot in the DS era. They were releasing these kind of platformers based on legacy series developed by external studios. And they should have been great, and they weren't. Wario Master Disguise was...
I forgot about that.
It's best that way. It's best to forget.
Yes. Clearly. The makers of Pinobee should not be making Yoshi's Island 2.
Mm. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is one of those that didn't work out. Princess Peach, I think, did. Super Princess Peach was a solidly made game. You know, New Super Mario Brothers was a solidly made game, but Yoshi's Island DS, not so much. Not one of the standout moments for Peach. Around the same time, they started putting her in a lot of sports games. You had Mario Superstar Baseball, Super Mario Strikers, Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, and she kind of follows the general light, fast, weak technical design that they gave her in Mario's Tennis. So that's kind of her canon throughout these games. I don't know if any of you, like Kat, I feel like you're the most likely to have played these games unless someone got pulled into reviewing it. But I'm curious if you have opinions.
I don't have a huge number of opinions for the Mario sports titles because they're all extremely arcadey. And out of all of them, I think I like Mario Strikers the best, ultimately. And I'm a little sad that Mario moved away from the whole soccer conceit for its particular sports games. In these sports games, I don't think Peach stands out particularly, aside from the fact that she wears cute outfits and she is one of many colorful members of the Mario cast. In recent years, I think that, again, I think Nintendo has fallen a little bit in love with Rosalina as a character and design, because I feel like she has been getting a lot more of the spotlight in some of the more recent sports games. Like, I think Mario Tennis Aces is coming out on the Switch. And if I recall the trailer, she got a lot more screen time than Peach, for example. But in terms of her actual appearances in the sports games, it's an opportunity for Peach to be, I want to say, sporty, kind of fun, very active. Like I said, like the compare and contrast of Mario Tennis, the instruction manual, where she's whacking the ball as hard as possible while Yoshi's eating the actual racket is telling to me.
Yeah. Also, Peach is one of the few people to actually attend the Tokyo 2020 Olympics.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Yes, they made that game.
All right. Speaking of things that are Japan only, she did have a role in Yakuman DS, a Japan-only Mahjong game featuring Mario characters. Kind of like, you know, Tetris DS, where you had the Nintendo characters in there, but each character had a much more meaningful role. One, there were a ton of Mario characters that you could play as your opponents. But two, each of them had a different personality and a different play style. So I don't know that much about Mahjong, even though I have to keep making videos about them. but I do know Japanese Mahjong is called Ryuichi. And there are different like suits that you have to create, and you have to call them when you create them. And then in order to win, you have to call Ryuichi. And the thing about Princess Peach is that she's programmed never to win. She'll never call Ryuichi, even if she has a winning hand. Hmm. So I don't know if that's, you know, her being sporting and saying, you know, like the lesser minions, they should deserve their moment of joy. Like, I'm already powerful and wealthy so they can have their fun, or if she's just meant to be timid, I don't know, or polite. In any case, that is her personality when she plays Mahjong. So if you ever find yourself playing Mahjong against Princess Peach, don't worry, you're going to win.
Was it a bug? Maybe it was a bug.
No, I mean, that is her program personality. Each character like will do specific things, or like focus on creating different sets of tiles, or be very aggressive or whatever. And her personality is not aggressive.
Hmm. Yes, girls aren't allowed to beat the boys. It's how it goes.
Ah, is that it? Okay.
It's not very feminine.
I had heard that, but that would explain a lot about why I won so much as a kid, even though I'm terrible at things.
This goes back to, as we were saying, like, Nintendo has gotten better over the years about Peach, but there's some definite misogyny creeping into her portrayal over the years. So, and I think that was honestly probably intentional, that they were like, no, Peach can't actually beat you in Mahjong. You don't want that. Come on.
Or maybe it's just too aggressive. Like, you don't want a woman mm-hmm. to be so aggressive that she would win at Mahjong. But then again, I'm sure there are many, many, many older East Asian ladies who could probably destroy anybody at Mahjong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have been to backroom Mahjong games, and it's terrifying. Like, they are out for blood. It's amazing. Anyway, Super Paper Mario is worth a mention. This is one that I never really got around to playing, but one of the memorable, because I heard it wasn't actually that great and is very drawn out, which, you know, it was time for that. But the you know, kind of the memorable promotions for this, they really leaned into the 8-bit pixel art style.
Yes.
For a lot of the power-ups, and specifically they leaned into the Super Mario Brothers style. So Princess Peach is playable here, and she can turn into a giant 8-bit character, and they just went for it. They took that horrible gouty sprite from Super Mario Brothers in the, you know, level 8-4 at the end, and that's a playable sprite. You can play as that character, like the size of the screen. It's amazing. I don't know if it's a good idea, but they did it.
Is this self-deprecating humor, like when Capcom started introducing the terrible Mega Man box art?
Mega Man, yeah, they sure never let go of that joke.
Yeah, I think so, but less, I don't know, there's less sourness about it. It's more just like, hey, this is a part of our legacy. You know, it's not great, but it's there. Whereas I feel like Bad Art Mega Man was, there was a kind of, I don't know, a little bit of a bit of nastiness to it.
Yeah, that
it was also really poorly timed when Tekken yes. came out, and that was when they had canceled all of the Mega Man projects and gave us Bad Box Art Mega Man. That did not go over well with anybody in the fandom.
Yeah, it was a fun joke in the early 2000s that like was a cultural touchstone for certain people, but then once it became integrated into actual official games, it was just like, come on guys, this is not that funny.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so then we move on to New Super Mario Brothers Wii and U, which you know, added the multiplayer component, like Super Mario Brothers 2 USA. And so, of course, they made Princess Peach playable. Just kidding. No, she had to be kidnapped.
Two
so
toads.
In her place, you get another toad. You have a blue toad and a yellow toad. That was Nintendo's great innovation.
That was a controversy. People were like, what the heck are you doing?
It was dumb and insulting. Like,
it was.
Really? You can't, yeah. You can't at least put another character in there? Like, stick Princess Daisy in there, or Wario, or something, but come on.
Especially in a game...
Like, a second toad?
Especially for a game that was designed to be played with, you know, all the players, to have two of them be almost identical, it feels just like a bad design choice to me.
And also, you know, they were leaning so heavily into play with the whole family, you know, people who are non-traditional gamers... that this is our audience now, and not to include a playable woman in the game, a girl, you know, woman, whatever, like that, it just seems like it's not a great message.
People asked them and they had some weird excuse, like I just looked it up now, and they said Nintendo said, I don't know who from Nintendo, but the response was basically like, well, we wanted everyone to have identical skills to Mario and Luigi in the game, and my response is, well, Peach is fictional and you can make a video game, just give her the same skills and abilities, and then it's like end of story. But that was their excuse.
It reminds me of the Mario 2, women are hard to design excuse.
Yes.
Certain games.
It's hard to render a dress.
Yeah, so not great, but Super Mario 3D Land did try to at least put things right a bit by giving you the actual Super Mario Brothers 2 playable cast and differentiating them according to their skills. So once again, Peach was back and playable and could do the hover skirt thing and everything, and also transform into a cat, which is great.
Yes, absolutely.
I have to say, Cat Peach is just about one of my favorite things in Mario ever, and single-handedly made me, like, I wasn't that much of a, like, I could vacillate between Mario and Peach in Mario 2, but in Mario 3D World, I'm like, I must insist, I have to play as Peach. Hmm. I have to be Cat Peach.
So she's very cute. I like black and white tuxedo Rosalina as well, and I do like how Luigi is technically I think he's supposed to be a Scottish fold. He's got like the little ears. I thought that was very cute.
Oh, sorry. Did I say Mario 3D Land? I meant World.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this was remade for ported to Switch with some new content. How does Princess Peach factor into that whole Bowsette thing that made the internet very, very horny for about a week?
Yeah.
Because it's something to do with her crown, isn't it?
Yes. She has there's a super crown, and a toad can put the crown on and become Peachette.
Toadette can
become Peachette and like level up or something. And so the internet imagined what would happen if, I guess, Bowser put on the crown and then Bowser gender swaps and becomes a Bowsette, and that became a thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of times you see creators do fun, goofy things without really thinking about the ramifications. And then fandom is like, let's talk about some ramifications. I remember, Rumiko Takahashi, the creator of Ranma 1/2, like someone asked her once, what would happen if Ranma became pregnant while he was in his trapped in his girl form? Like, would he stay a woman? Would he be pregnant as a man? And her response was just, I never thought about that. And you shouldn't either. Like, don't think too hard about this.
Now, please. I don't think all creators are that innocent. I think someone thought, I want to see this as cosplay. Let's make Princess Bowsette or whatever.
I think that Mackie is a Final Fantasy 14 fan. You can definitely say that devs are thinking about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yes. Some games, certainly.
You know that she was probably laying in bed one night at 3 a.m. She's like, but what if she got pregnant while in girl form?
I have to admit, it's a good question. That's very intriguing.
You know that has to have been a question that occurred to her, and she's like, no, the body horror implications are too much. I'm just moved. I'm not even going to address this.
Mpreg exists for a reason.
God.
I choose not to speculate about the motives and thoughts of the creators of things that I like. It's a dangerous road. Anyway, yes, I guess that's, the great current last, like I believe Peach's last playable appearance in a game. So that's her current legacy, is an extraordinarily horny version of Bowser.
that's better ways to go.
Or a version of Bowser for which the internet is extremely horny. I guess, yeah, Bowser's always kind of been that way. Anyway, what a note to end on. Amazing. Thanks, everyone.
Well, that's what happened to get me on the podcast. I thought you would know by now.
If you get Nadi on the podcast, there has to be some very messed up fan fiction discussions at some point.
It's my fault because I just remembered as we were talking. I didn't put it in the notes, but I just remembered the whole Bowsette thing. And
yeah, the Bowsette thing was
a dangerous road.
That was also pre-COVID. Think of how much more depraved we've all become since this has happened.
Oh, Bowsette's practically vanilla.
Yeah.
Not even vanilla. Like, arrowroot flavor.
I mean, has anyone thought about what would happen if you put the Peachette crown on Lady Dimitrescu?
Ooh.
What's her name? Dimitrescu,
I think.
So we would have very tall vampire Peach, which
maybe
is almost what we had in Thousand Year Door, right?
That's absolutely right.
Peach.
Good point.
All right. Well, okay. So Nintendo has already gone there. All right. So Peach has been in a few other games recently. None so recent as the Switch version of Mario 3D World, but she's playable in Dr. Mario World, which is a mobile game, and therefore I have not played it. Sorry. She is a playable character in Mario and Rabbit's Kingdom Battle, which a game whose existence I find offensive, but apparently it's really, really good. So I guess if you like strategy games or tactics games and
it's basically
want to see Nintendo characters with rabbids, that's the one to play.
It's good.
I know that this game is excellent, and it's so entirely my jam because I love tactics games. I love XCOM very much.
Yes, XCOM.
Yeah, it's just XCOM. But the inclusion of rabbids, including a rabbit wearing the Princess Peach outfit, is so offensive to me that I'm sorry, I can't do it. I can't play this game.
It's really gross.
It's tough.
I hate it.
Yeah, these characters, I just, after we did the Wii generation with these guys and they came back, I was like, what are we doing here? These aren't things that anybody likes.
They're very popular in Europe.
Yeah, well, in Europe, they're huge.
Lots of things are popular in Europe. Figure out what I'm meaning.
I could go further, but yes. I won't.
Anyway, that's our journey through the career of Princess Peach. Sometimes super, sometimes not. But on the whole, you know, a pretty fun character. And when they let her stand on her own and shine, I think she's interesting and fun to play as. So that's my pitch. Anyway, we do have a letter. I put out a call for letters, and only one person has opinions about Princess Peach, and that is Peter Laprade, who says, "It feels unbelievable that our acquaintance with the character of Princess Peach is now 35 years. Although in my youth of watching Deke cartoons with the Mario Brothers with their Brooklyn accents, I know the character as Princess Toadstool. My fondest memories of the NES include playing as Peach in Super Mario Brothers 2, or as Japan would call it, Super Mario Brothers USA. I completely skipped by the N64 and GameCube, so I missed out on the early voiceover of Peach in those games. I think either Super Mario Galaxy or New Super Mario Bros. Wii was the first game I'd ever heard Peach's voice in. I will get around to playing Super Mario Bros. 3D World, as I do prefer seeing Peach take an active role in the story rather than being the person Mario needs to rescue from Bowser, the Koopa nice guy who definitely needs to learn a few things. I have no opinion on Pink Gold Peach, as I don't play Mario Kart. I can imagine the discussion of Mario canon, and the headcanon of the podcasters will be a lively one. Looking forward to hearing it."
That was a correct prediction.
Yeah, all those
Goldfinger
colored versions. Like, what's the whole pink gold thing?
Goldfinger.
Like, is that just... Is it? I thought it was just...
No,
like,
no idea. Just
Nintendo,
just,
like, oh, we got to get on that iPhone bandwagon.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think that's plenty of Princess Peach talk. So, thanks all of you for being on this here episode. It was a lively one.
It was peachy.
It was peachy.
Oh, peachy. Very good. Very good, Nadia. Yes,
Thank you.
All right. So hopefully everyone at home listening enjoyed this journey, this romp through the Mushroom Kingdom and its most famous monarch. If you enjoyed it, the good news is that Retronauts puts together mini podcasts on a more than weekly basis talking about such things, and you can find it at retronauts.com, on Libsyn, and on the Greenlit Podcast Network, on many podcatching devices, and of course you can go all in and subscribe to us on Patreon. This podcast is community funded, and patrons like you, hopefully you, keep the show going. And you can go to patreon.com/retronauts for $3 a month, get early access to our podcasts every Monday with higher bitrate quality, no cross promotions or advertisements, or you can go deluxe and pay $5 a month and get all of that plus additional content every other Friday, a patron exclusive episode of the podcast, just, you know, like a full on episode, no gimmicks, no scrimping, no cutbacks. It's the legit thing. And then on weekends, Diamond Fight puts together a column and a podcast to go with it, a little mini podcast. So that's a lot of bonus content for your extra $2. I highly recommend it. It is like travel back in time to the 90s. It's the nice price. It's the best deal for your money. Anyway, that's the Retronauts pitch. Nadia, you came up with the peachy joke, so you get to pitch your wares first.
I guess I'm speaking for myself and Kat here when I say that we both are on the Acts of the Blood God podcast, RPG podcast. We talk about RPGs, old, new, Eastern, and Western. That is at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. And since I like Kat so much, I'll let her fill in all the tier stuff because it totally all slips my mind right now.
Yeah, if you come over to Acts of the Blood Guide, you get to hear a lot more fan fiction stories, honestly. So that's just the energy that Nadia and I have. But yeah, patreon.com/bloodguidepod. We have a lot of specials. We're currently playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition as of the recording of this podcast, and we're going to record an episode next week. It'll be a lot of fun. And you can follow me on Twitter at @_catbot.
All right, Bob.
Hey, everybody, it's Bob. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcasts are all on the Talking Simpsons Network. That's at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. There's Talking Simpsons, the chronological exploration of the Simpsons, and What a Cartoon. We look at a different cartoon from a different series every week. You can find those wherever you find podcasts. But again, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. That's where we have all of our bonus episodes and our mini-series, like the recently wrapped Talking of the Hill. That's our King of the Hill podcast retrospective. So again, you can find that all at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
And finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, doing stuff here on Retronauts, doing stuff at Limited Run Games, and doing stuff on my YouTube channel, which is just Jeremy Parrish. It's all video game related. So if you like the stuff we're talking about here, you'll probably like that too. You can find me on social media as GameSpite on Twitter. And if you look on Instagram, look for Telebunny. And every other day or so, I post a photo of a classic video game box art, like a shot of a in a chronological order, talking about its context and stuff. It's a thing that I've been doing, and I'm going to keep doing it until I run out of boxes. So that's what I do. Video games, basically. Anyway, that was it for Princess Peach. And I think with this, that's, you know, we've pretty much covered the entirety of the Mario universe. Like I said, we've got Mario, Yoshi, Toad, Wario, and Peach. So we're done. We're done with Mario. No more characters to talk about.
Mario's
dead.
So
thanks, everyone, for listening. Mario's dead?
Mario's dead. Everyone's
gone.
No. Mario's fine.
He's fine. He's just, you know, been covered. Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, there's weird characters like Egad, Princess Daisy. So we might talk about them sometime. But for now, that's pretty much it. So thanks everyone for listening. And now I think, you know, you should ask yourself, what would Peach do? And the answer is slam a bottle of champagne. Do it.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.